Eddystark had no more need of you, but I did. And the one thing the Lannisters have never lacked for is gold. When the moment came to toss the dice, I was counting on your being smart enough to know where your best interests lay. Happily for me, you did.
He slammed stone and steel together again, fruitlessly.
Here, said Bronn, squatting. I'll do it.
He took the knife and flint from Tyrion's hand and struck sparks on his first try. A curl of bark began to smoulder.
Well done, Tyrion said. Scum you may be, but you're undeniably useful, and with a sword in your hand you're almost as good as my brother Jaime. What do you want, Bronn? Gold? Land? Women? Keep me alive, and you'll have it.
Bronn blew gently on the fire, and the flames leaped up higher.
And if you die?
Why then, I'll have one mourner whose grief is sincere,
Tyrion said, grinning.
The gold ends when I do.
The fire was blazing up nicely. Bronn stood, tucked the flint back into his pouch, and tossed Tyrion his dagger.
Fair enough, he said. My sword's yours, then. But don't go looking for me to bend the knee and milord you every time you take a shit. I'm no man's toady.
Nor any man's friend, Tyrion said. Have no doubt you'll betray me as quick as you did Lady Stark, if you saw a profit in it. If the day ever comes when you're tempted to sell me out, remember this, Bronn. I'll match their price, whatever it is. I like living. And now, do you think you could do something about finding us some supper?
Take care of the horses, Bronn said, unsheathing the long dirk he wore at his hip.
He strode into the trees. An hour later, the horses had been rubbed down and fed, the fire was crackling away merrily, and a haunch of a young goat was turning above the flames, spitting and hissing.
All we lack now is some good wine to wash down our kid,
Tyrion said.
That, a woman, and another dozen swords,
Bronn said. He sat cross-legged beside the fire, honing the edge of his long sword with an oilstone.
There was something strangely reassuring about the rasping sound it made when he drew it down the steel.
It will be full dark soon,
the sellsword pointed out.
I'll take first watch. For the good it'll do us. It might be kinder to let them kill us in our sleep.
Oh, I imagine they'll be here long before it comes to sleep.
The smell of the roasting meat made Tyrion's mouth water. Bronn watched him across the fire.
You have a plan?
He said flatly, with a scrape of steel on stone.
A hope, I call it, Tyrion said. Another toss of the dice.
With our lives as a stake?
Tyrion shrugged.
Well, what choice do we have?
He leaned over the fire and sawed a thin slice of meat from the kid.
Ah!
He sighed happily as he chewed. Grease ran down his chin.
A bit tougher than I'd like, and in want of spicing, but I'll not complain too loudly. If I were back at the Eyrie, I'd be dancing on a precipice in hopes of a boiled bean.
And yet you gave the turnkey a purse of gold, Bronn said.
A Lannister always pays his debts.
Even Maud had scarcely believed it when Tyrion tossed him the leather purse. The jailer's eyes had gone big as boiled eggs as he yanked open the drawstring and beheld the glint of gold.
I kept the silver, Tyrion had told him, with a crooked smile. But you were promised the gold, and there it is.
It was more than a man like Maud could hope to earn in a lifetime of abusing prisoners.
And remember what I said. This is only a taste. If you ever grow tired of Lady Arryn's service, present yourself at Casterly Rock, and I'll pay you the rest of what I owe you.
With golden dragons spilling out of both hands, Maud had fallen to his knees and promised that he would do just that. Bronn yanked out his dirk and pulled the meat from the fire. He began to carve thick chunks of charred meat off the bone as Tyrion hollowed out two heels of stale bread to serve as trenchers.
"'If we do reach the river, what will you do then?'
the sellsword asked as he cut.
"'Oh, a hoa, and a feather bed, and a flagon of wine for a start,'
Tirion held out his trencher, and Bronn filled it with meat.
"'And then to Castle Rock or King's Landing, I think. "'I have some questions that want answering concerning a certain dagger.'
The sellsword chewed and swallowed.
"'So you were telling it true. It was not your knife.'
Tirion smiled thinly.
"'Do I look a liar to you?'
By the time their bellies were full, the stars had come out, and a half-moon was rising over the mountains. Tirion spread his shadow-skin cloak on the ground and stretched out with his saddle for a pillow.
"'Our friends are taking their sweet time.'
"'If I were them, I'd fear a trap,' Bronn said. "'Why else would we be so open, if not to lure them in?'
Tirion chuckled.
"'Then we ought to sing, and send them fleeing in terror.'
He began to whistle a tune.
"'You're mad, dwarf,'
Bronn said, as he cleared the grease from under his nails with his dirk.
"'Where's your love of music, Bronn?
"'If it was music you wanted, you should have gotten a singer to champion you.'
Tirion grinned.
That would have been amusing. I can just see him fending off Savardis with his wood harp.
He resumed his whistling.
Do you know this song? He asked.
You hear it here and there, in inns and all houses.
Moorish, the seasons of my love, sweet and sad, if you understand the words. The first girl I ever bedded used to sing it. "'And I've never been able to put it out of my head.'
"'Tirion gazed up at the sky. "'It was a clear, cold night, "'and the stars shone down upon the mountains "'as bright and merciless as truth.
"'I met her on a night like this,' he heard himself saying. "'Jamie and I were riding back from Lannisport "'when we heard a scream, "'and she came running out into the road "'with two men dugging her heels, shouting threats.' My brother unsheathed his sword and went after them, while I dismounted to protect the girl. She was scarcely a year older than I was, dark-haired, slender, with a face that would break your heart. It certainly broke mine. Low-born, half-starved, unwashed, yet lovely. They'd torn the rag she was wearing half off her back, so I wrapped her in my cloak. "'While Jamie chased the men into the woods. "'By the time he came trotting back, "'I'd gotten a name out of her and a story. "'She was a crofter's child, orphaned, "'when her father died of fever on her way to, well, nowhere, really. "'Jamie was all in a lather to hunt down the men. "'It was not often outlaws dead prey on travellers so near to Castle Rock.' And he took it as an insult. The girl was too frightened to send off by herself, though, so I offered to take her to the closest inn and feed her while my brother rode back to the rock for help. She was hungrier than I would have believed. We finished two whole chickens and part of a third and drank a flagon of wine, talking. I was only 13, and the wine went to my head, I fear. The next thing I knew, I was sharing her bed. If she was shy, I was shyer. I'll never know where I found the courage. When I broke her maidenhead, she wept. But afterward, she kissed me and sang her little song. And by morning, I was in love.
You?
Bronn's voice was amused.
Absurd, isn't it?
Tirion began to whistle the song again.
I married her,
he finally admitted.
A Lannister of Castle Rock, wed to a crofter's daughter, Bronn said. How could you manage that?
Oh, you'd be astonished at what a boy can make of a few lies, 50 pieces of silver, and a drunken septon. I dared not bring my bride home to Castle Rock, so I set her up in a cottage of her own, and for a fortnight
we played at being man and wife. And then the Septon sobered and confessed all to my lord father. Tyrion was surprised how desolate it made him feel to say it, even after all these years. Perhaps he was just tired. That was the end of my marriage. He sat up and stared at the dying fire, blinking at the light.
He sent the girl away?
He did better than that, Tyrion said. First he made my brother tell me the truth. The girl was a whore, you see. Jaime arranged the whole affair, the road, the outlaws, all of it. He thought it was time I had a woman. He paid double for a maiden, knowing it would be my first time. After Jaime had made his confession, to drive home the lesson, Lord Tywin brought my wife in and gave her to his guards. They paid her fair enough, a silver for each man. How many whores command that higher price? He sat me down in the corner of the barracks and bade me watch. And at the end, she had so many silvers, the coins were slipping through her fingers and rolling on the floor. The smoke was stinging his eyes. Tyrion cleared his throat and turned away from the fire to gaze into the darkness. Lord Tywin had me go last, he said in a quiet voice, and he gave me a gold coin to pay her, because I was a Lannister, and worth more.
After a time, he heard the noise again, the rasp of steel on stone, as Brunn sharpened his sword.
13, or 30, or 3. I would have killed a man who did that to me.
Tyrion swung around to face him.
You may get that chance one day. Remember what I told you. A Lannister always pays his debts.
He yawned.
I think I will try that sleep. Wake me if we're about to die.
He rolled himself up in the shadow skin and shut his eyes. The ground was stony and cold, but after a time Tyrion Lannister did sleep. He dreamt of the Sky Cell. This time he was the jailer, not the prisoner. Big, with a strap in his hand, and he was hitting his father, driving him back towards the abyss.
Tyrion?
Bronn's warning was low and urgent. Tyrion was awake in the blink of an eye. The fire had burned down to embers, and the shadows were creeping in all round them. Bronn had raised himself to one knee, his sword in one hand and his dirk in the other. Tyrion held up a hand. Stay still, it said.
Come, shed our fire. The night is cold, he called out to the creeping shadows. I fear we've no wine to offer you, but you're welcome to some of our goat.
All movement stopped. Tyrion saw the glint of moonlight on metal.
Our mountain,
a voice called out from the trees, deep and hard and unfriendly.
Our goat.
Your goat, Tyrion agreed. Who are you? When you meet your guards,
a different voice replied,
say it was Gunther, son of Gurn of the Stone Crows, who sent you to them.
A branch cracked underfoot as he stepped into the light, a thin man with a horned helmet, armed with a long knife.
And Shagger, son of Dolph.
That was the first voice, deep and deadly. A boulder shifted to their left and stood and became a man.
Massive and slow and strong he seemed, dressed all in skins, with a club in his right hand and an axe in his left. He smashed them together as he lumbered closer.
Other voices called other names. Conn, and Torrick, and Jagat, and more that Tyrion forgot the instant he heard them. 10 at least. A few had swords and knives, others brandished pitchforks and scythes and wooden spears. He waited until they'd done shouting out their names before he gave them an answer.
I am Tyrion, son of Tywin, of the Clan Lannister, the Lions of the Rock. We will gladly pay you for the goat we ate.
What have you got to give us, Tyrion, son of Tywin? Asked the one who named herself Gunther, who seemed to be their chief.
There is silver in my purse, Tyrion told them. This hauberk I wear is large for me, but it should fit Conn nicely, and the battle axe I carry would suit Shaggy's mighty hand far better than the wood axe he holds.
The half-man would pay us with our own coin, said Conn.
Conn speaks truly, Gunther said. Your silver's ours, your horses are ours, your hauberk, and your battle axe, and the knife at your belt, these are ours too. You have nothing to give us but your lives. How would you like to die, Tyrion, son of Tywin?
In my own bed, with a belly full of wine and a maiden's mouth around my cuck at the age of 80, he replied.
The huge one, Shagger, laughed first and loudest. The others seemed less amused.
Conn, take their horses, Gunther commanded. Kill the other and seize the half-man. He can milk the goats and make the mothers laugh.
Bronn sprang to his feet.
Who dies first?
No, Tyrion said sharply. Gunther, son of Gurn, hear me. My house is rich and powerful. If the Stone Crows will see us safely through these mountains, my lord father will shower you with gold.
The gold of a lowland lord is as worthless as a half-man's promises, Gunther said.
Half a man I may be, Tyrion said. Yet I have the courage to face my enemies.
What do the Stone Crows do but hide behind rocks and shiver with fear as the Knights of the Vale ride by?
Shagger gave a roar of anger and clashed club against axe. Jagged poked at Tyrion's face with the far-hardened point of a long wooden spear. He did his best not to flinch.
Are these the best weapons you could steal? He said.
Good enough for killing sheep, perhaps, if the sheep do not fight back. My father's smiths shit better steel.
Our little boy man, Shagger replied, will you mock my axe after I chop off your manhood and feed it to the goats?
But Gunther raised a hand.
No, I would hear his words. The mothers go hungry, and steel fills more mouths than gold. What would you give us for your lives, Tyrion, son of Tywin? Swords? Lances? Mail?
All that, and more, Gunther, son of Gurn, Tyrion Lannister replied, smiling. I will give you the veil of Arryn.
Arya. When Arya saw the shape of a great hill looming in the distance, golden in the afternoon sun, she knew it at once. They had come all the way back to High Hart. By sunset, they were at the top, making camp where no harm could come to them. Arya walked around the circle of weirwood stumps with Lord Beric's squire, Ned, and they stood on top of one, watching the last light fade in the west. From up here she could see a storm raging to the north, but High Hart stood above the rain. It wasn't above the wind, though. The gusts were blowing so strongly that it felt like someone was behind her, yanking on her cloak. Only when she turned, no one was there. Ghosts, she remembered. High Hart is haunted. They built a great fire atop the hill, and Thoris of Myr sat cross-legged beside it, gazing deep into the flames, as if there was nothing else in all the world.
What is he doing? Arya asked Ned. Sometimes he sees things in the flames, the squire told her. The past, the future, things happening far away.
Arya squinted at the fire to see if she could see what the Red Priest was seeing, but it only made her eyes water, and before long she turned away. Gendry was watching the Red Priest as well.
Can you truly see the future there?
He asked suddenly. Thoris turned from the fire, sighing.
Not here, not now, but some days, yes.
the Lord of Light grants me visions?
Gendry looked dubious. My master said you were a sot and a fraud, as bad a priest as there ever was.
That was unkind, Thoros chuckled. True, but unkind. Who was this master of yours? Did I know you, boy?
I was prenticed to the master armourer, Tobho Mott, on the Street of Steel. Used to buy your swords from him.
Just so. He charged me twice what they were worth, then scolded me for setting them afire.
Thoros laughed.
Your master had it right. I was no very holy priest. I was born youngest of eight. So my father gave me over to the Red Temple, but it was not the path I would have chosen. I prayed the prayers, and I spoke the spells, but I would also lead raids on the kitchens. And from time to time they found girls in my bed, such wicked girls. I never knew how they got there. I had a gift for tongues, though, and when I gazed into the flames, well, from time to time, I saw things. Even so, I was more bother than I was worth, so they sent me finally to King's Landing to bring the Lord's Light to seven besotted Westeros. King Aerys so loved fire, it was thought he might make a convert. Alas, his pyromancers knew better tricks than I did. King Robert was fond of me, though. The first time I rode into a melee with a flaming sword, Kevin Lannister's horse reared and threw him, and his grace laughed so hard I thought he might rupture. The Red Priest smiled at the memory. It was no way to treat a blade, though. Your master had the right of that, too.
Fire consumes.
Lord Beric stood behind them, and there was something in his voice that silenced Thoros at once.
It consumes, and when it is done, there is nothing left. Nothing.
Oh, Beric, sweet friend, the priest touched the Lightning Lord on the forearm. What are you saying?
Nothing I have not said before. Six times, Thoros. Six times is too many.
He turned away abruptly. That night the wind was howling almost like a wolf, and there were some real wolves off to the west giving it lessons. Notch, Angai, and Merit of Moontown had the watch. Ned, Gentry, and many of the others were fast asleep when Arya spied the small, pale shape creeping behind the horses, thin, white hair flying wild as she leaned upon a gnarled cane. The woman could not have been more than 3 feet tall. The firelight made her eyes gleam as red as the eyes of John's wolf. He was a ghost, too. Arya stole closer and knelt to watch. Thoros and Lem were with Lord Beric when the dwarf woman sat down uninvited by the fire. She squinted at them with eyes like hot coals.
The ember and the lemon come turn on me again, and his grace the Lord of Corpses.
An ill-omened name. I have asked you not to use it.
I have, but the stink of death is fresh on you, my lord.
She had but a single tooth remaining.
Give me wine, or I will go. My bones are old, my joints ache when the winds do blow, and up here the winds are always blowing.
A silver stag for your dreams, my lady, Lord Beric said, with solemn courtesy. Another, if you have news for us.
I cannot take a silver stag, nor ride one. A skin of wine for my dreams, and for my news, a kiss from the great oaf in the yellow cloak.
The little woman cackled.
Aye, a sloppy kiss, a bit of tongue. It has been too long, oh, too long. His mouth will taste of lemons and mine of bones. I am too old.
Aye, Lem complained. Too old for wine and kisses. All you get from me is the flat of my sword, crone.
My hair comes out in handfuls, and no one has kissed me for 1,000 years. It's hard to be so old. Well, I will have a song then, a song from Thomas Evans for my news.
You will have your song from Tom, Lord Beric promised. He gave her the wineskin himself. The dwarf woman drank deep, the wine running down her chin. When she lowered the skin, she wiped her mouth with the back of a wrinkled hand and said,
Sour wine for sour tidings. What could be more fitting? The king is dead. Is that sour enough for you?
Arya's heart caught in her throat. Which bloody king is dead, crone? Lem demanded.
The wet one. The Kraken King, my lords. I dreamt him dead, and he died. And the iron squids now turn on one another. Oh, and Lord Huster Tully has died too. But you know that, don't you? In the Hall of Kings, the goat sits alone and fevered as the great dog descends on him.
The old woman took another long gulp of wine, squeezing the skin as she raised it to her lips. The great dog? Did she mean the hound? Or maybe his brother, the mountain that rides? Arya was not certain. They bore the same arms, three black dogs on a yellow field. Half the men whose deaths she prayed for belonged to Sir Gregor Clegane, Polliver, Dunson, Raff the Sweetling, the Tickler, and Sir Gregor himself. Maybe Lord Beric will hang them all.
I dreamt a wolf howling in the rain, but no one heard his grief,
the dwarf woman was saying.
I dreamt such a clangor, I thought my head might burst, drums and horns and pipes and screams. But the saddest sound was the little bells. I dreamt of a maid at a feast with purple serpents in her hair, venom dripping from their fangs. And later I dreamt that maid again, slaying a savage giant in a castle built of snow.
She turned her head sharply and smiled through the gloom right at Arya.
You cannot hide from me, child. Come closer now.
Cold fingers walked down Arya's neck. Fear cuts deeper than swords, she reminded herself. She stood and approached the fire warily, light on the balls of her feet, poised to flee. The dwarf woman studied her with dim red eyes.
I see you, she whispered. I see you, wolf child, blood child. I thought it was the Lord who smelled of death.
She began to sob, her little body shaking.
You're cruel to come to my hill. Cruel, I gauged on grief at Summerhall. I need none of yours. Begone from here, dark heart, begone.
There was such fear in her voice that Arya took a step backward, wondering if the woman was mad. Don't frighten the child, Thoris protested. There's no harm in her. Lem Lemoncloak's finger went to his broken nose. Don't be so bloody sure of that. She will leave on the morrow with us, Lord Beric assured the little woman. We're taking her to River Run, to her mother.
Nay,
said the dwarf,
you're not. The black fish holds the rivers now. If it's the mother you want, seek her at the twins, for there is to be a wedding.
She cackled again.
Look in your fires, pink priest, and you will see. Not now, though. Not here. You see nothing here. This place belongs to the old gods still. They linger here, as I do, shrunken and feeble, but not yet dead. Nor do they love the flames, for the oak recalls the acorn. The acorn dreams the oak. The stump lives in them both. And they remember when the first men came with fire in their fists.
She drank the last of the wine in four long swallows, flung the skin aside, and pointed her stick at Lord Beric.
I'll have my payment now. I'll have the song you promised me.
And so Lem woke Tom Sevenstrings beneath his furs and brought him, yawning, to the fireside with his woodharp in hand.
"The same song as before?" he asked. "Why, my Jenny's song. Is there another?"
And so he sang, and the dwarf woman closed her eyes and rocked slowly back and forth, murmuring the words and crying. Thoris took Arya firmly by the hand and drew her aside.
"Let her savour her song in peace," he said. "That is all she has left."
I wasn't going to hurt her, Arya thought.
What did she mean about the twins? My mother's at River Run, isn't she?
She was, the Red Priest rubbed beneath his chin.
A wedding, she said. We shall see. Whenever she is, Lord Beric will find her, though.
Not long after, the sky opened, lightning cracked, and thunder rolled across the hills, and the rain fell in blinding sheets. The dwarf woman vanished, as suddenly as she had appeared, while the outlaws gathered branches and threw up crude shelters. It rained all through that night, and come morning, Ned, Lem, and Watty the miller awoke with chills. Watty could not keep his breakfast down, and young Ned was feverish and shivering by turns, with skin clammy to the touch. There was an abandoned village half a day's ride to the north, Notch told Lord Beric. They'd find better shelter there, a place to wait out the worst of the rains. So they dragged themselves back into the saddles and urged their horses down the great hill. The rains did not let up. They rode through woods and fields, fording swollen streams where the rushing water came up to the bellies of their horses. Arya pulled up the hood of her cloak and hunched down, sudden and shivering, but determined not to falter. Merritt and Mudge were soon coughing, as bad as Watty, and poor Ned seemed to grow more miserable with every mile.
"When I wear my helm, the rain beats against the steel and gives me headaches," he complained. "And when I take it off, my hair gets soaked and sticks to my face and in my mouth." "You have a knife," Gendry suggested. "If your hair annoys you so much, shave your bloody head."
"He doesn't like Ned." The squire seemed nice enough to Arya, maybe a little shy, but good-natured. She had always heard that Dornishmen were small and swarthy, with black hair and small black eyes, but Ned had big blue eyes, so dark that they looked almost purple, and his hair was pale blonde, more ash than honey. "How long have you been Lord Beric's squire?" she asked, to take his mind from his misery.
"He took me for his page when he espoused my aunt," he coughed. "I was 7, but when I turned 10, he raised me to squire. I won a prize once, riding at Rings."
"I never learned the lance, but I could beat you with a sword," said Arya. "Have you killed anyone?" That seemed to startle him.
"I'm only 12.
"I killed a boy when I was 8, Arya almost said, but she thought she'd better not. "You've been in battles, though?"
"Yes."
He did not sound very proud of it.
"I was at the Mummer's Ford when Lord Beric fell into the river. I dragged him up onto the bank so he wouldn't drown and stood over him with my sword. I never had to fight, though. He had a broken lance sticking out of him, so no one bothered us. When we regrouped, Green Gergen helped pull his lordship back onto a horse."
Arya was remembering the stable boy at King's Landing. After him, there'd been that guard whose throat she'd cut at Harrenhal, and Sir Aymer's men at that holdfast by the lake. She didn't know if Wheeze and Chiswick counted, or the ones who died on account of the weasel soup.
All of a sudden, she felt very sad. "My father was called Ned too," she said. "I know. I saw him at the Hand's tourney. I wanted to go up and speak with him, but I couldn't think what to say."
Ned shivered beneath his cloak, a sudden length of pale purple.
"Were you at the tourney? I saw your sister there. Solaris Tyrell gave her a rose."
"She told me." It all seemed so long ago. Her friend, Jane Poole, fell in love with your Lord Beric. He's promised to my aunt. Ned looked uncomfortable. That was before, though. Before he...
died, she thought, as Ned's voice trailed off into an awkward silence.
Their horses' hooves made sucking sounds as they pulled free of the mud.
My lady,
Ned said at last, you have a base-born brother, John Snow. He's with the Night's Watch on the wall. Maybe I should go to the wall instead of River Run. John wouldn't care who I killed or whether I brush my hair. John looks like me, even though he's bastard-born. He used to muss my hair and call me little sister.
Arya missed John most of all. Just saying his name made her sad.
How do you know about John?
He is my milk brother.
Brother?
Arya did not understand.
But you're from Dorne. How could you and John be blood?
Milk brothers, not blood.
My lady mother had no milk when I was little, so Willa had to nurse me.
Arya was lost.
Who's Willa? John Snow's mother. He never told you. Oh, she served us for years and years, since before I was born.
John never knew his mother, not even her name.
Arya gave Ned a wary look.
You know her, truly.
Is he making muck of me?
If you lie, I'll punch your face. Willa was my wet nurse, he repeated solemnly. I swear it on the honour of my house. You have a house?
That was stupid. He was a squire. Of course he had a house. Who are you?
My lady.
Ned looked embarrassed.
I'm Edric Dean, the Lord of Starfall.
Behind them, Gendry groaned.
Lords and ladies,
he proclaimed in a disgusted tone.
Arya plucked a withered crab-apple off a passing branch and whipped it at him, bouncing it off his thick bull head.
Ow!
He said.
That hurt!
He felt the skin above his eye.
What kind of lady throws crab-apples at people?
The bad kind, said Arya, suddenly contrite. She turned back to Ned.
I'm sorry, I didn't know who you were, my lord.
The fault is mine, milady. He was very polite.
John has a mother, Willa. Her name is Willa.
She would need to remember so she could tell him the next time she saw him. She wondered if he would still call her little sister.
I'm not so little any more. He'll have to call me something else.
Maybe once she got to River Run, she could write John a letter and tell him what Ned Dane had said.
There was an Arthur Dane, she remembered, the one they called the Sword of the Morning. My father was Sir Arthur's elder brother. Lady Ashara was my aunt. I never knew her, though. She threw herself into the sea from atop the pale stone sword before I was born.
Why would she do that? Said Arya, startled. Ned looked weary. Maybe he was afraid that she was going to throw something at him.
Your lord father never spoke of her, he said. The Lady Ashara Dane of Starfall.
No. Did he know her?
Before Robert was king, she met your father and his brothers at Harrenhal during the year of the false spring.
Oh, Arya did not know what else to say.
Why did she jump in the sea, though? Her heart was broken.
Sansa would have sighed and shed a tear for true love, but Arya just thought it was stupid. She couldn't say that to Ned, though, not about his own aunt.
Did someone break it?
He hesitated.
Perhaps it's not my place. Tell me.
He looked at her uncomfortably.
My aunt Illyria said Lady Ashara and your father fell in love at Harrenhal.
That's not so. He loved my lady mother.
I'm sure he did, my lady, but she was the only one he loved.
He must have found that bastard under a cabbage leaf, then,
Gendry said behind them. Arya wished she had another crab-apple to bounce off his face.
My father had honour, she said angrily, and we weren't talking to you anyway.
Why don't you go back to Stony Sept and ring that girl's stupid bells?"
Gendry ignored that.
"At least your father raised his bastard, not like mine. I don't even know my father's name. Some smelly drunk, I'll wager, like the others my mother dragged home from the alehouse. Whenever she got mad at me, she'd say, 'If your father was here, he'd beat you bloody.' That's all I know of him."
He spat.
"Well, if he was here now, might be I'd beat him bloody. But he's dead, I figure, and your father's dead too. So what does it matter who he lay with?"
It mattered to Arya, though she could not have said why. Ned was trying to apologize for upsetting her, but she did not want to hear it. She pressed her heels into her horse and left them both. Angai the archer was riding a few yards ahead. When she caught up with him, she said, "Dornishmen lie, don't they?"
"Oh, they're famous for it," the bowman grinned. "Of course, they say the same of us marchers. So, there you are. What's the trouble now? Ned's a good lad. He's just a stupid liar."
Arya left the trail, leapt a rotten log, and splashed across a stream bed, ignoring the shouts of the outlaws behind her. "They just want to tell me more lies." She thought about trying to get away from them, but there were too many, and they knew these lands too well. What was the use of running if they caught you? It was Harwin who rode up beside her in the end. "Where do you think you're going, my lady? You shouldn't run off. There are wolves in these woods, and worse things."
"I'm not afraid," she said. "That boy Ned said—"
"Aye, he told me. Lady Shara Dane. It's an old tale, that one. I heard it once at Winterfell, when I was no older than you are now."
He took hold of her bridle firmly and turned her horse around. "I doubt there's any truth to it, but if there is, what of it? When Ned met this Dornish lady, his brother Brandon was still alive, and it was him betrothed to Lady Catelyn. So there's no stain on your father's honour. There's naught like a tourney to make the blood run hot. So maybe some words were whispered in a tent of a knight, who can say? Words or kisses, maybe more. But where's the harm in that? Spring had come, or so they thought, and neither of them was pledged."
"She killed herself, though," said Arya uncertainly. "Ned said she jumped from a tower into the sea."
"So she did," Harwin admitted, as he led her back. "But that was for grief, I'll wager. She'd lost a brother, the Sword of the Morning." He shook his head. "Let it lie, my lady. They're dead, all of them. Let it lie. And please, when we come to Riverrun, say naught of this to your mother."
The village was just where Notch had promised it would be. They took shelter in a grey stone stable. Only half a roof remained, but that was half a roof more than any other building in the village.
"It's not a village, it's only black stones and old bones." "Did the Lannisters kill the people who lived here?" Arya asked, as she helped Angai dry the horses. "No," he pointed. "Look at how thick the moss grows on the stones. No one's moved them for a long time. And there's a tree growing out of the wall there, see? This place was put to the torch a long time ago."
"Who did it, then?" asked Gendry.
"Oscar Tully."
Notch was a stoop, thin, grey-haired man, born in these parts.
"This was Lord Goodbrook's village. When Riverrun declared for Robert, Goodbrook stayed loyal to the king. So Lord Tully came down on him with fire and sword. After the trident, Goodbrook's son made his peace with Robert and Lord Oscar. But that didn't help the dead none."
A silence fell. Gendry gave Arya a queer look, then turned away to brush his horse. Outside, the rain came down and down.
"I say we need a fire," Thoros declared. "The night is dark and full of terrors, and wet too, eh? Too very wet."
Jack Belucky hacked some dry wood from a stall, while Notch and Merritt gathered straw for kindling. Thoros himself struck the spark, and Lem fanned the flames with his big yellow cloak until they roared and swirled. Soon it grew almost hot inside the stable. Thoris sat before it, cross-legged, devouring the flames with his eyes, just as he had atop High Heart. Arya watched him closely, and once his lips moved, and she thought she heard him mutter, "River run." Lem paced back and forth, coughing, a long shadow matching him stride for stride, while Thomas Evans pulled off his boots and rubbed his feet.
"I must be mad to be going back to River Run," the singer complained. "The Tullys have never been lucky for old Tom. It was that Lyser sent me up the high road, when the Moon Men took my gold and my horse and all my clothes as well. There's knights in the Vale still telling how I came walking up to the bloody gate with only my harp to keep me modest. They made me sing the Name Day Boy and the King Without Courage before they opened that gate. My only solace was that three of them died laughing. I haven't been back to the Eyrie since, and I won't sing the King Without Courage either, not for all the golden Casterly."
"Lannisters," Thoris said, roaring red and gold. He lurched to his feet and went to Lord Beric. Lem and Tom wasted no time joining them. Arya could not make out what they were saying, but the singer kept glancing at her, and one time Lem got so angry he pounded his fist against the wall. That was when Lord Beric gestured for her to come closer. It was the last thing she wanted to do, but Harwin put a hand in the small of her back and pushed her forward. She took two steps and hesitated, full of dread.
"My lord."
She waited to hear what Lord Beric would say.
"Tell her,"
the Lightning Lord commanded Thoris. The Red Priest squatted down beside her.
"My lady," he said, "the Lord granted me a view of River Run, an island in a sea of fire, it seemed. The flames were leaping lions with long crimson claws, and how they roared! A sea of Lannisters, my lady. River Run will soon come under attack."
Arya felt as though he'd punched her in the belly. "No."
"Sweetling," said Thoris, "the flames do not lie. Sometimes I read them wrongly, blind fool that I am, but not this time, I think. The Lannisters will soon have River Run under siege." "Rob will beat them." Arya got a stubborn look. "He'll beat them, like he did before." "Your brother may be gone," said Thoris. "Your mother as well. I did not see them in the flames. This wedding the old one spoke of, a wedding on the twins, she has her own way of knowing things, that one. The werewoods whisper in her ear when she sleeps. If she says your mother is gone to the twins—"
Arya turned on Tom and Lem.
"If you hadn't caught me, I would have been there. I would have been home."
Lord Beric paid no heed to her outburst.
"My lady," he said, with weary courtesy, "would you know your grandfather's brother by sight? Sir Brendan Tully, called the Blackfish? Would he know you, perchance?"
Arya shook her head miserably. She had heard her mother speak of Sir Brendan Blackfish, but if she had ever met him herself, it had been when she was too little to remember.
"Small chance a Blackfish will pay good coin for a girl he doesn't know," said Tom. "Those Tullys are a sour, suspicious lot. He's like to think we're selling him false goods."
"We'll convince him," Lem Lemoncloak insisted. "She will, or Harwin. River Run is closest. I say we take her there, get the gold, and be bloody well done with her."
"And if the lions catch us inside the castle," said Tom, "they'd like nothing better than to hang his lordship in a cage from the top of Castley Rock."
"I do not mean to be taken," said Lord Beric.
A final word hung unspoken in the air. Alive. They all heard it, even Arya, though it never passed his lips.
"Still, we dare not go blindly here. I want to know where the armies are, the wolves and lions both. Sharma will know something, and Lord Vance's maester will know more. Acorn Hall's not far. Lady Smallwood will shelter us for a time, while we send scouts ahead to learn.
His words beat at her ears like the pounding of a drum. And suddenly it was more than Arya could stand. She wanted River Run, not Acorn Hall. She wanted her mother and her brother Rob, not Lady Smallwood or some uncle she never knew. Whirling, she broke for the door, and when Harwin tried to grab her arm, she spun away from him, quick as a snake. Outside the stables, the rain was still falling, and distant lightning flashed in the west. Arya ran as fast as she could. She did not know where she was going, only that she wanted to be alone, away from all the voices, away from their hollow words and broken promises. All I wanted was to go to River Run. It was her own fault for taking Gendry and Hot Pie with her when she left Harrenhal. She would have been better alone. If she had been alone, the outlaws would never have caught her, and she'd be with Rob and her mother by now. They were never my pack. If they had been, they wouldn't leave me. She splashed through a puddle of muddy water. Someone was shouting her name. Harwin, probably, or Gendry, but the thunder drowned them out as it rolled across the hills, half a heartbeat behind the lightning. The Lightning Lord, she thought, angrily. Maybe he couldn't die, but he could lie. Somewhere off to her left, a horse whinnied. Arya couldn't have gone more than 50 yards from the stables, yet already she was soaked to the bone. She ducked around the corner of one of the tumble-down houses, hoping the mossy walls would keep the rain off, and almost bowled right into one of the sentries. A mailed hand closed hard around her arm.
"You're hurting me," she said, twisting in his grasp. "Let go. I was going to go back. I—"
"Back?" Sandor Clegane's laughter was iron scraping over stone. "Bugger that, wolf girl. You're mine."
He needed only one hand to yank her off her feet and drag her kicking toward his waiting horse. The cold rain lashed them both and washed away her shouts, and all that Arya could think of was the question he had asked her. "Do you know what dogs do to wolves?"
Circe. Septimoel was a white-haired harridan with a face as sharp as an axe and lips pursed in perpetual disapproval. "This one still has her maidenhead, I'll wager," Circe thought, "though by now it's hard and stiff as boiled leather." 6 of the High Sparrow's knights escorted her, with the rainbow sword of their reborn order emblazoned on their kite shields. "Septa!" Circe sat beneath the iron throne, clad in green silk and golden lace. "Tell His High Holiness that we are vexed with him. He presumes too much." Emeralds glimmered on her fingers and in her golden hair. The eyes of court and city were upon her, and she meant for them to see Lord Tywin's daughter. By the time this mummer's farce was done, they would know they had but one true queen. "But first we must dance the dance, and never miss a step. Lady Marjorie is my son's true and gentle wife, his helpmate and consort. His High Holiness had no cause to lay his hands upon her person, or to confine her and her young cousins, who are so dear to all of us. I demand that he release them." Septimoel's stern expression did not flicker. "I shall convey your grace's words to His High Holiness, but it grieves me to say that the young queen and her ladies cannot be released until and unless their innocence has been proved." "Innocence? Why, you need only look upon their sweet young faces to see how innocent they are." "A sweet face oft hides a sinner's heart," Lord Merryweather spoke up from the council table. "What offence have these young maids been accused of, and by whom?" The scepter said, "Megha Tyrell and Eleanor Tyrell stand accused of lewdness, fornication, and conspiracy to commit high treason. Alla Tyrell has been charged with witnessing their shame and helping them conceal it. All this Queen Marjorie has also been accused of, as well as adultery and high treason." Circe put a hand to her breast. "Tell me, who is spreading such calumnies about my good daughter? I do not believe a word of this. My sweet son loves Lady Marjorie with all his heart. She could never have been so cruel as to play him false. The accuser is a knight of your own household. Sir Osney Kettleblack has confessed his carnal knowledge of the Queen to the High Septon himself, before the altar of the Father. At the council table, Harry's Swift gasped, and Grand Maester Pycelle turned away. A buzz filled the air as if 1,000 wasps were loose in the throne room. Some of the ladies in the galleries began to slip away, followed by a stream of petty lords and knights from the back of the hall. The gold cloaks let them go, but the Queen had instructed Sir Osfrid to take note of all who fled. Suddenly the Tyrell rose does not smell so sweet. "Sir Osney is young and lusty, I will grant you," the Queen said, "but a faithful knight for all that. If he says that he was part of this, no, it cannot be. Marjorie is a maiden." "She is not. I examined her myself at the behest of His High Holiness. Her maidenhead is not intact. Scepter Aglantine and Scepter Melisent will say the same, as will Queen Marjorie's own scepter, Nysterica, who has been confined to a penitent cell for her part in the Queen's shame. Lady Mega and Lady Eleanor were examined as well. Both were found to have been broken." The wasps were growing so loud that the Queen could hardly hear herself think. I do hope the little Queen and her cousins enjoyed those rides of theirs. Lord Merryweather thumped his fist on the table. Lady Marjorie had sworn solemn oaths, attesting to her maidenhood, to her grace the Queen and her late father. Many here bore witness. Lord Tyrell has also testified to her innocence, as has the Lady Olenna, whom we all know to be above reproach. Would you have us believe that all of these noble people lied to us? Perhaps they were deceived as well, my lord, said Scepter Moel. I cannot speak to this. I can only swear to the truth of what I discovered for myself when I examined the Queen. The picture of this sour old crone poking her wrinkled fingers up Marjorie's little pink cunt was so droll that Circe almost laughed. We insist that His High Holiness allow our own maestress to examine my good daughter, to determine if there is any shred of truth to these slanders. Grand Maester Pycelle, you shall accompany Scepter Moel back to beloved Baylor's Sept, and return to us with the truth about our Marjorie's maidenhead. Pycelle had gone the colour of curdled white. At council meetings the wretched old fool cannot say enough, but now that I need a few words from him he has lost the power of speech, the Queen thought, before the old man finally came out with, There is no need for me to examine her privy parts. His voice was a quaver. I grieve to say, Queen Marjorie is no maiden. She has required me to make her moon tea, not once, but many times. The uproar that followed that was all that Circe Lannister could ever have hoped for. Even the royal herald beating on the floor with his staff did little to quell the noise. The Queen let it wash over her for a few heartbeats, savouring the sounds of the little Queen's disgrace. When it had gone on long enough, she rose stone-faced and commanded that the gold cloaks clear the hall. Marjorie Tyrell is done, she thought, exulting. Her white knights fell in around her as she made her exit through the king's door behind the iron throne. Boris Blount, Merrin Trant, and Osmond Kettleblack, the last of the king's guard still remaining in the city. Moonboy was standing beside the door, holding his rattle in his hand, and gaping at the confusion with his big round eyes. A fool he may be, but he wears his folly honestly. Maggie the Frog should have been in Motley too, for all she knew about the morrow. Circe prayed the old fraud was screaming down in hell. The younger queen whose coming she'd foretold was finished, and if that prophecy could fail, so could the rest. No golden shrouds, no Valonqar. I am free of your croaking malice at last. The remnants of her small council followed her out. Harry Swift appeared dazed. He stumbled at the door and might have fallen if Aurane Waters had not caught him by the arm. Even Orton Merryweather seemed anxious. The small folk are fond of the little queen, he said. They will not take well to this. I fear what might happen next, Your Grace. Lord Merryweather is right, said Lord Waters. If it please Your Grace, I will launch the rest of our